So this week's parasha is Mitzora. So it's Mitzora, but it's also almost Erev Pesach. Now, those of you who just now skipped a heartbeat and say, what do you mean Erev Pesach? I have another week or so, but that's not really true because this week is Shabbat HaGadol. So therefore, rabbis already have to give the Shabbat HaGadol drasha, which I'm not going to be saying now what I'm going to say on Shabbat. For a couple of reasons. One is I don't know yet what I'm saying on Shabbat. No, I'm halfway there, but it'll be a little different unless it changes and I get a surprise ending, and then it is the same. But we did want to go, and come on, face it, this is Mitzorah. Like, what do you want from me? But we're going to do a little bit of Pesach things as well, and a little bit of theology, which may be surprising. So let's begin. The pasuk that we have in the first source is actually, those of you who are really pedantic, even though this week's parasha is Metzora, it's a pasuk about Metzora, which was from last week. So let's just start a second about leprosy. About leprosy, right? Speaking of leprosy, so there is a disease which is today called Hansen's disease. So most of the commentaries do not believe that tzara'at and leprosy are the same. One of the real good reasons to make that argument that they're not the same, is you're dealing instead with some kind of a spiritual phenomenon, is the fact that the Torah immediately after it goes to leprosy on the person, it goes on to tzara'at on the house. So any of you who've ever had mold on your house, you can say, okay, what have I been, you know, talking about? And it would actually indicate some real sophistication in terms of understanding of different types of molds and how they're dangerous. But again, I don't believe that anyone has ever suggested on a physiological or physical level there's any connection between those different types of tzara'at. But on a spiritual level, it is seen as being related one to the other. And therefore, I think that it leads us in the direction that we're not dealing with the same phenomenon. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not related to one another. When I say related, I'm speaking more in terms of attitudinally, if that's a word, in terms of the way that we may relate to the tzara'at, which means if we call leprosy or tzara'at leprosy or leprosy tzara'at, first of all, tzara'at has a type of a fear which is built into it, or leprosy has a fear built into it. If you look at through the Middle Ages, probably the most feared or detestable people were Jews and those who had leprosy. And Jews who had leprosy, that's it, you win the jackpot. The things that we know in the back of our minds in terms of, oh, the Jews are poisoning the wells and so on, one of the things they thought they were poisoning the wells with was with leprosy. I mean, that was exactly the issue, is that we're going to be giving leprosy to the world and to people, and we're going to cause this really detestable malady. So as far as the Torah is concerned, when we look at the first source, Kol Yimei Asher Nega Bo Yitama Tamehu, Badad Yeshev Michutz L'Machaneh At Moshavo. Did I read that Trump right? Badad Yeshev Michutz L'Machaneh Moshavo. This person needs to sit in isolation outside of the camp. So again, we discussed a little bit last week that there are different types of Tum'ah. And even though that in our minds, the worst type of tumah is tumat meit, somebody who passes away, that's not really true in terms of laws of tumah and tahara. In terms of laws of tumah and tahara, somebody who is impacted by tumat meit only is outside of the place which is kadosh, while somebody who has tzara'at is outside of all three machanot, outside completely. And as we see, it's not just outside, it's also isolation. Rashi writes, "Badad yeshev shelo yutmeim yoshvim imo," and even other people who are tmeim, spiritually, ritually impure, cannot sit with this person. Amru Rabotenu, "Manishtana mishar tmeim leshev badad." Why is this person different from other people who are tmei that he needs to sit in isolation? Sorry, that wasn't nice. He or her needs to sit in isolation. We always want to be fair in terms of these things. Needs to sit in isolation. That destructive talk causes separation between a person and their wife, between a person and their neighbor, friend, and so on. So this person needs to be isolated. Essentially what it's saying is that this person is guilty of Lashon Hara, we'll just look into that in a moment, this person is guilty of Lashon Hara and therefore cannot sit with society. The association with Sara'at and Lashon Hara, which is actually not immediately clear, what we'll see in a second, is actually more associated with Sara'at or Mitzora and Motzi Shemra. And those even sound like one another. And if you look in source number 3, the Gemara says, Omer of Yossi ben Zimra, Kol Mesaper Lashon Hara Niga Imba Imalav. That person brings Nega. He brings, how would you translate Nega? Affliction. Omeresh Lakish, Ma'idich Tiv Zotia Torat HaMitzora. What does it mean when it says this? These are the instructions of, or the Torah of the Mitzora, Zoti Torato Shemotzi Shemra. So Reish Lakish is certainly following the sound of the words, that Motzi Shemra sounds like Mitzora, and therefore we have an association between the person who makes up things and says things which aren't true about somebody, and the person who then gets Tzara'at. But this association of Reish Lakish, which is very clever, and again, it's Mitzora instead of Tzara'at, Lashon Hara, and so on, but I'm saying it's very nice, but there are stronger literary arguments that you can make. I just want to go back to that word nega for a moment. There are ancient mystical sources, and we talked about this years and years ago, that discusses the idea, it's in the Sefer Yetzirah, it speaks about nega, which comes from the same words as oneg, which means that you can either have affliction or you can have pleasure, and therefore, and I can say, if now I've made the association with speech, I can say it's actually going to be speech which can turn something from being something which is going to be pleasurable to something which could be absolute affliction. The source for that, if you mentioned earlier before we started, you mentioned the serpent. We were in Gan Eden, and God created the world in a place of Gan Eden. God created humanity to be in a place of pleasure, Gan Eden, a place of pleasure. And it was through misuse of words, and there's various levels of this, where we became exiled. And I think that's very important, because what we just now did is creating an association between misspeech and between going off into exile, being punished, and so affliction, and so on. I mean, on the one hand, I could have said that the affliction is simply the lack of Eden or Oneg, and so on. But I'll just play this out 90 seconds or so, and then we'll move on. We can say this as follows. When God creates man, he creates man with the ability to speak. God creates the world by speech. Man is given the ability to speak. What makes man different from all of the rest of creation is our ability to use words to communicate. We use these words to be sometimes friendly, creative, and sometimes we use these words in a devastating way, which means I'm not going to say that man is greater than all of creation, even though in a sense it's the pinnacle of creation, because we're both greater and we're worse. Which means animals kill when they're scared. Animals kill out of self-defense. Animals kill for food. But animals don't kill out of hatred. So you've never had a species who's killed 6 million or more of their own other than humans. You don't have any other species, obviously, that use words to attack others other than humans. So unless you want to go back to the Garden of Eden and speak about the serpent, but of course the serpent is complicated, because the serpent in the Garden of Eden speaks and has legs and loses the legs and then becomes the serpent. What may be very interesting is when I look at the actual creation of man, what it says is, Vayitzar, you don't have this in front of you. This is Perek Bet Pasuk Zayin. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim et Adam Afar min Adama. God forms man. Again, this is a formation, not a creation. Creation is something from nothing. Formation is something from something. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim et Adam Afar min Adama. Man gets formed from the Afar of the Adama, which is really interesting, because what happens to the serpent after it gets punished? It gets sent back to the Afar and returning back to this more physical sense. So man is essentially this hybrid between the animal and the spiritual. But it continues, says, "Vayipach papav nishmat chayim," and God breathes into man the spirit of life. "V'yadam lenefesh chaya," and man becomes a living being. So this breathing into man is giving him the soul. Here is where the Targum Onkelos says that what does it mean that God breathes into him? It says that man becomes the ruach memalala. Man becomes a speaking being. Man becomes this being that now has this ability to speak. So those of you who are wondering this whole idea of God breathing, the soul, breath, and then speech, our speech is the use of that breath, as it were, which is why the Targum, which very often, or most of the time, 99% of the time, is absolutely literal. Over here, he says something very interesting, which perhaps he understands as being literal, that God breathes into us, and that's what gives us the ability of being able to communicate with our breath. I'll just note that in Rosh Hashanah, which is man's creation, we actually have one mitzvah which is done. It's the only mitzvah all year that you do with breath, and that's blowing the shofar. So therefore, it's interesting that God gives us this soul, gives us this ability with this breath, and maybe on Rosh Hashanah, when we don't speak, right, we're silent, we have this almost this primordial scream which comes out of the cry of the shofar, the scream of the shofar, but it's interesting that it's being done with breath, which may parallel to this moment before God gives us this breath. Before we start to speak, before we start to make our mistakes and so on. So I'm just saying it's interesting where the shofar may fit into all of this, but it then will be the serpent who will speak to Eve, and then eventually Adam, by extension, will end up sinning. And as I said, the serpent then will have an affliction of its skin. It will lose its skin. The serpent-like skin is something which is very leprous, and therefore there's just this interesting issue, again, of the nega, Oneg, Eden, expulsion, and this sense that Chazal have that this is one of the things that causes expulsion. Just to be a little bit clearer on this, the Gemara in Yoma says that the first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of three things, because of Gila Raya, Shvichutam, and Vodazara, because of, in no particular order, because of sexual sins, because of murder, and because of idolatry. And then it says, but the second temple was destroyed because of things that we said. Sorry, let me restate that. Because of sinat chinam, because we hated one another. On the other hand, the Gemara in Erechin says that when a person speaks lashon hara, and it brings this whole teaching, it's just as bad as those three things, as Gilui Raya, Shvichutam, and Avodah Zarah, which is one of the things that led the Chafetz Chaim to say, oh, look at that. How do you do sinat chinam? I know that's a funny thing, because we're very good at it. How do you do sinat chinam? And he said, you do it by speech. Which means by speech is the utility that you is the tool that we do use in order to go and to do our sinat chinam. That's the thing that we use most of the time. So this idea of misspeech causing exile, the sense that the rabbis have in terms of sinat chinam, again becoming this idea of misspeech, may go back to Garden of Eden, starting with speech and then eventually ending up in exile. Okay, now all of that is actually quite important for where I want to get today. You don't know yet why, but it is. So let's go back to Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish felt that the word Mitzora and Motzi Shemra were connected to one another. So he felt that these ideas are similar, that therefore there is this connection between somebody afflicted, nega, somebody afflicted with tzarat, and somebody who is guilty of misspeech. So therefore, the person, going back to the Rashi that we saw, of course, based on Chazal, is that this person is outside of all the camps. This person is more than just outside of the camps. This person is in isolation. However, the association between Lashon Hara and Tzarat is something which is far more direct in the text of the Torah itself. In no particular order, we have both Moshe Rabbeinu and Miriam. And I actually want to start with Miriam, and then we'll go backwards to Moshe. Miriam in source number 4, Vatidaber Miriam va'aron b'Moshe lodoti isha hakushita shelakach ki isha kushit lakach. Now this is one of the verses that when we read Rashi, we get to the opposite understanding of what the Chumash actually says. This is one of the most extreme examples, because it said, Rashi will tell you that Moshe separated from his wife, while the Chumash says that Moshe took a wife. Actually opposite. Rashi will tell you that this is Tzipporah because we have our famous theory of conservation of characters, and over here it says Isha Kushit, so therefore either this is the same wife or different. So beautiful. So you're still from the 60s that black is beautiful, which is actually found in Targum Unculus. Unculus says that Kushit Shifirta, that she was beautiful. There are those who understand that she's beautiful, not because black means beautiful, but because black, it's Lashon Saginahor, it's the opposite. But you look in other sources, I believe also in the Pseudo Targum Yonatan, you'll find one of these wonderful legends that Moshe, instead of when he escaped going north, he went south, and instead of ending up in Midian at first, he ended up in Cush. And I don't know if you've ever heard the stories of Moshe coming to Cush, becoming the king of Cush, marrying a princess of Cush, and having a Cushite wife. And all of this is to explain, I guess, the 80-year absence we have, more or less, because we don't know the exact age when Moshe ran away, but there's lots and lots of years over there. So Moshe ends up becoming a very successful, not just prince of Egypt, but also king of Cush. I guess that sounds also good. King of Cush, prince of Egypt. And either way, Moshe, here it says he marries this woman, and they complain. Again, Vatidaber Miriam ve'Aaron. So who spoke? Miriam spoke. What's Aaron doing there? He's listening. Aaron gets into trouble various times, but for not talking. He doesn't get in so much trouble, but for not talking. Which means over here, he didn't talk, but he gets in trouble. Why? Because he's listening to Lashon Hara. When Moshe hits the rock, Aaron gets into trouble, but Aaron didn't do anything, didn't say anything. So apparently, Aaron was appointed to speak. So when he doesn't speak, he gets into trouble because you're the one who's supposed to talk. And maybe Aaron's talk would have been a little different. It's also very interesting, just in terms of the entire concept of the Mitzorah, we go back to what exactly is Tzarat in terms of the problem with Tzarat, whatever it is in terms of a disease or a spiritual disease. It's interesting that it's the Kohen who goes to inspect and not the rabbi or not the doctor, but rather the Kohen goes. So it's somebody from the family of Aaron who goes to take a look. It's also interesting that the Berachat Kohenim is Levarechat, or what bracha does the Kohen make when they bless Levarechat Amo Yisrael ba'ahava. So therefore, if the problem over here is one of Sinat Chinam, and therefore which is using words in an improper way, so it's interesting that the Kohen, who should be one who is motivated by love, is the one who goes and checks up on this person. So as I said, that can be an entire subtext. Nonetheless, it's interesting over here, I know Vavetitaber. You want to blame Aaron also, but it doesn't say. I know that's why the language is interesting. Vatidaber Miriam ve'Aaron b'Moshe. But anyway, it continues to go into this issue of prophecy, which is not our main concern right now. It also tells us that Moshe was incredibly modest, and therefore Moshe wasn't even troubled by this. It didn't bother him. But Lashon Hara is even if the person doesn't hear, doesn't care, and so on. And when the episode ends, Hanan Sar Pasuk Yud Me Ala Oav Yine Miriam Mitzaraat Kisheleg, she became as leprous as snow. So of course, the way after I emphasized that in the beginning, she's complaining that he married somebody black. God seems to be saying, "You don't like, you like white? Okay, we can make you white over here." Which is interesting because the commentaries don't say this. As far as I recall, the first one that I ever saw, I mean, I thought that this was absolute pshat, but I think Robert Alter said this in his book in terms of biblical narrative, which means you're dealing with a very late 20th century opinion out of the academy as opposed to others. But I think it's just pshat. I don't know what else to do with it. Maybe the reason that it's not pshat is because of something else, which we'll get to in a moment. Moshe's response is to daven, any of you who go looking to find out somebody's name before you say Mishaberach, and you have to make a long Mishaberach, Moshe makes a very short Mishaberach in Pasuk Yud Bet, and say, sorry, it's not even here in the prayer, is it? First, Aaron says, Al natia kemet, let her not be like somebody who's dead, which is expressed in the Gemara that there are four people who are as if they're dead even though they're alive. One of them is somebody who has tzarat. So that's also very interesting. Don't let her be like as if she were dead. And then Moshe says, "Is tefillah kel na rafa na la." Okay, that's the tefillah. Doesn't say her name, her mother's name, or anyone else's name. And actually, his prayer was pretty good because it works, although there's a little delay. When I move over to the other episode, which you don't have in front of you, and that's the episode of Moshe. This is in Perek Dalet when Moshe is at the Sneh. God says, go down, tell the people. And, and God says they're going to believe you. And Moshe then says, Vayan Moshe Vayomer, Vayin Lo Yaminu Li. They're not going to believe you. Now, that's not nice, because God just said they will believe you. And he says they won't believe you. So I understand that Moshe is the most modest man. This is connected. And therefore, he says, no, you know, they're not going to believe me, right? They're going to say God didn't speak to you. But God said they will believe you. So get past it. He will believe you. So God then says two things to Moshe. One is he says, "Vayomer lav maze biyadecha," which is very interesting. What's that in your hand? Oh, like God doesn't recognize, right? Yes. And "Vayomer mateh," and God says it's a staff. How do you say mateh in Aramaic? Chutra. This will help you with your chadgadia, right? The stick, the chutra, is the mateh. Okay. So he says mateh. "Vayomer hashlichehu arza," throw it to the ground. "Vayishlech arza v'yihil nachash." He threw it to the ground and it became a serpent. Now, the reason why I think this is significant is that when we go back, again, in the Garden of Eden, where did we find our first person who's guilty of speaking Lashon Hara? By the way, what was the Motzi Shemra there? Maybe that's the better word there. What was the Motzi Shemra that the Nachash was guilty of? There is Motzi Shemra there. His Motzi Shemra was actually against God. Because he said, if you eat this, you will be like God. So you realize that two things happened at that moment. One is that man became incredibly inflated, far beyond our capabilities, right? We are not one apple, grape, wheat, etrog, not any other opinions, line of white powder or anything else you can imagine of being from becoming like God. And God is so far beyond what we are that this is absolutely Motzi Shemra in terms of what God is. So it's a bad sale for us, and it's just not true in terms of God. That's the Motzi Shemra. But over here, what Moshe, so therefore this becomes a serpent, which is really interesting, because as if God is saying to you, you know, we've been here before, right? Somebody has said, because when God says they will believe you, and Moshe says they won't believe me, so he's also saying Motzi Shemra on Am Yisrael and on God himself by saying that, no, you're not able to make them believe or they won't believe. So God is then showing him this serpent, which again I think is really interesting. As we continue there, he throws it to the ground, comes in a chash, Moshe gets afraid, which is also strange for somebody who's a professional shepherd to be afraid of a serpent. Or a snake, which leads me back to the Garden of Eden and sin and snake ideas. And God tells Moshe to pick it up. He picks it up. It's also interesting, the Netziv has an interesting letter about this. V'yomer Hashem Moshe shlach yotcha v'choz biznavo, v'yishlach yado v'yichazek bo v'yihilamate b'kapeu. That it could be that it flips around, but I won't get into too much of it. The Netziv was trying to say that even though this was very Zionist approach of the Netziv, that even though the people who right now look like they're on the bottom will end up being on the top, which means that the non-religious can end up building a country. And over here is, well, you think the Jews in Israel, you think the Jews in Egypt are incapable, you think that they don't have belief, you think they don't have emunah, that these are the people who will become great, and therefore essentially the Nachash can become this mateh as well, or the chutra, if you will. And then God says to him, okay, and if that lesson wasn't good enough, Vayomer Shemlo, Odhavena Yadcha Bechekecha, Vyavo Yoda Becheko, Vyotzivine Yado Mitzarat Kishelek. And he puts his hand in, and then it becomes as leprous as snow. So that actually weakens my argument before about Miriam having to do with Isha Kushit, because over here as well, Moshe's hand becomes as leprous, and the term snow is used over here as well, but that's in order to express the idea of being a leper. So as I said, Reish Lakish made a very nice connection, a linguistic connection, Mitzora, and Motzi Shemra. But as I said, there's stronger linguistic reasons, reasons in terms of the narrative of the Torah to make this connection. With the serpent in Gan Eden, we have to work a little bit harder, but with Miriam and Moshe, it becomes easier. Now, we're going to get to Pesach, Bli Neder, soon. But before we go there, I mentioned earlier about the Jews in terms of the Middle Ages, and the Jews having been seen as a nation of lepers, as being seen as people who are outside of society, people being rejected by society, people who were, I mean, that was part of the issue in terms of the Middle Ages, that Jews were not seen as regular people. I mean, anti anti-Semitism was not just they don't like us and so on. It was much more than that. There was this almost visceral attack against the Jews because they saw us as somebody who has tzarat, and or as a people like this. What's interesting, just as a side note to all of this, is source 5 and source 6 and source 7, and I'm going to mention this quickly, and 8. I'm going to mention this quickly, but source number 5 is one which is claimed by various missionaries that we never teach. They said, why? Because it's quote-unquote Isaiah chapter 53. So Isaiah 53, or for us Yeshayahu Nun Gimel, is one which speaks about someone who they refer to as the suffering servant of Isaiah. Mi amin lishmo atenu zera shema min niglata, vayal ki yonek lefanav kashurish me'eris tziyah, v'lo toar lo, v'lo hadar, v'nir'eyu, v'lo mar'ev v'nech medehu. Which is actually all quite strange, because it all describes somebody who is of not very attractive, somebody who looks really, really bad. For as much as missionaries have claimed that this section is speaking about the founder of Christianity, it's quite interesting that I've never seen a portrayal in terms of medieval art which has fit into this, because it describes somebody who is really, really unattractive. But it continues and says, Nivaze v'chadal ishim ish machavot v'yadu acholi, somebody who was a man of pain and there was a choli. Choli means that there was some kind of an illness. He carried our illness and our pain. And we were seen as people who nagua. Nagua is a term, affliction, which is connected to tzara'at. Now, We considered him as somebody who was nagua, somebody who had tzara'at. So now, what's interesting about this is in source number 6, which is after source number 7 in the Gemara, but it's the same page, Amud Aleph and Bet, and this is the source in Sanhedrin, which speaks about Mashiach. So the first part is, what is the name of Mashiach? Mashmo, what's his name? Debe Shilo Amri, Shilo. So in the Beit Midrash of Shiloh, they thought his name was Shiloh, which basically means we'll see in a second, Shenamar Ad Kivo Shiloh, Debe Rabbi Yana Yomru, Yinon Shmo. So essentially, every Beit Midrash thought their Rebbe was the Mashiach. Okay, if that resonates with you, wonderful. Shenamar Yihi Shmo Le'olam, and so on. Debe Rabbi Chanina Amru, Chanina Shmo. And then it says, V'yesh Omer Menachem and Chizkiya Shmo. Is that enough? We'll just pause there for a second. What were the names? Shiloh, Yinon, Chanina, and Menachem. By the way, the Rosh Teva, those three names, is Mashiach. So it could be that all of them were partially right, or partially wrong. The Mashiach is really the totality of all right. You have the Mem from Menachem, and you have the Yud from Yinon, Mashiach. You want Shiloh, the Shin from Shiloh, the Yud from Yinon, and then the Chet from Chanina. So therefore you put it all together and you have Mashiach. But then the Gemara continues, Rabbanan Amre, Chavira Debe Rabbi Shmo. His name is, now, Chavira, it means white. His name is the white, Whitey. His name is Whitey. Those of you with white hair and white beards, now you can put another claim in. Shenemar, and what does it quote? It quotes the Pasuk in Yeshayahu Nun Gimel, in terms of affliction. So it understands the Nagua over here as connected to leprosy. So look at that. According to this, Mashiach is somebody who will be perceived as having leprosy, which is really quite interesting. And later, and the other Gemara, which I said is a little bit before this, is in source number 7, is also this whole Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, Ashlech Eliyahu, Dehava Kai Apitcha Demarata, the Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Levi bumps into Eliyahu, who is standing by the opening of the cave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, which according to the Zohar was in Lud. I don't want to ruin any business for Meron, but according to the Zohar was in Lud. Would I kid about such things? Omer Lo, he says, there may be more than one cave. There could be the cave that he learned in and then the cave that he's buried in. But, yes, Meron is very interesting how that got into the story. I don't believe there's any ancient source about that. Amr lo atina la alma da'ati. Amr lo im yitzar adon hazeh. Amr Rishu ben Levi, shnayim ra'iti v'kol shlosha shamati. Amr le eimat ati Mashiach. When is Mashiach going to come? Amr lo zil shaydel didei. Go ask him. V'hechi yativ, but where is he? Apitcha. Now there's two versions here, Deromi, by the gate and the entrance to Rome, or Decarta, to the big city. So we'll skip a little bit, because he's, okay, you know, when you're coming, Amalei Shalom Alecha, Rebbe, Umori, Amalei Shalom Alecha, Bar Levi, Yeshua ben Levi. So, well, you know, how are you? So Omer lo, Le'emat Atimar. So anyway, if we continue this whole thing, he starts asking, when are you going to come? But part of what goes on in this whole story, it's actually the part that I skipped, umay simane yativ beni ani sovle chalayim v'kulam shorav asir b'chad zimna. It goes back that he's around the people who are leprous and so on. Now, I don't want to go too much into all of this because there's, again, two different directions, especially when speaking about Mashiach. And I wonder out loud in terms of the New Testament when it speaks about also the founder of Christianity supposedly healing people with leprosy. So ultimately, just to try to pay attention to this point, ultimately this verse, these verses or the whole description in Yeshayon and Gimel are about most likely Am Yisrael as a whole. Am Yisrael bore the sins of humanity. This is what the Ramban claims in his Vikuach, in his disputation with Pablo Christianity, that this is Am Yisrael. We've been the ones throughout history who've been seen as being the ones who have leprosy. We've been the ones who bore the sins. We're the ones who other nations found to be disgusting. We're the ones who were the people of God, and we're the ones who are going to bring about, ultimately, we will bring about redemption. But this side note of leprosy in terms of an identity of Am Yisrael or even connected to Mashiach, I think really is quite interesting. So just pay attention now so that I don't lose all of you on the next turn. What these sources, 5, 6, 7, and 8, which was Rashi in the second line writes, Sov lech la'im, that Mashiach is with those who are suffering, Minugaim, Rashi tells us, those who have tzarat, v'hunami minuga dichtiv, and he also has tzarat, as it says, and he quotes the Gemara, he quotes the pasuk from Yeshayahu and the Gemara from the next page, again associating Mashiach, redemption, with leprosy, and ultimately it's going to be the healing of leprosy as well, and so on. Now, just so that I don't lose all of you, so I said I have to do this very, very deliberately. What did we see so far today? Right, we saw that there is this connection between misspeaking and tzarat, going all the way back, if you will, to Miriam, going back to Moshe, going back to the serpent, going back to the Garden of Eden. Adam as well misspeaks when God says to him, you know, what happened, and then he blames God ultimately again. He blames God because you gave me this kind of wife. Had he spoken and said something else, Chatati, aviti, poshati, which is interesting that fixing our sins necessitates a vidui, which is also a verbalization, then I believe everything would have been different. But instead, the misspeech ends up into exile, which is something which Chazal understood. Right? Misspeech, but misspeech is connected also, and exile is connected also to this idea of leprosy in terms of being rejected, in terms of being someone who's being seen, or isolation. And really, the Jewish people throughout history have been seen as a people who are leprous people, a people who are rejected in every kind of way. And when you do what the Ramban asks you to do, read through Yeshayahu Nun Gimel, right, the 53rd chapter of Yeshayahu of Isaiah, and you read it through the perspective of the Ramban, this is speaking of Am Yisrael, then you realize how clear this really is. Now, all that I'm going to do now is therefore to assume, this is a very simple assumption, that maybe if this is a theme in the ultimate in the long exile, and then as we move towards redemption, maybe this is also a theme in terms of the first exile that took place, and then the redemption that comes from this. So I'll explain what I mean by this. We'll start in source number 9, simply because it's the first one that I found that said it. It's in the book called the Moshe of Zakenim, which is really from the Middle Ages, quite old. And the second line he writes, Dalet Aleph, Dover Acher, Pesach. What does the word Pesach mean? He writes, Po Sach. Hear their speech. Po Shesach Bema Eda Garam Levanav Lehishtabed Al Zeh Ha'et. Ad Zeh Ha'et. Now that is an incredible sentence, and that needs to be understood. That there's what? Yes. What? Okay. So again, Pesach is connected to now their speech. Posach, now their speech. Shesach, because when Avram spoke, and he said Bima Eda. Now this goes back to the Brit Ben Abtarim. By the Brit Ben Abtarim, God makes this covenant with Avram and promises all kinds of things, and then Avram asks, and how will I know? So there are those who see that as being something which is negative. What do you mean, how will I know? You mean, this is God, and God said this is what's going to be. So the very question of Ma'idah is seen as by some as being negative. There are some who will then say, the next section, which is, your descendants will be enslaved for 400 years, the fourth generation will come out, and then you'll get the land. They see that as being a response to Bama'ida. Now you're going to say, well, that's really harsh. I mean, hundreds of years worth of slavery. I'll just point out that your alternative to this is saying, I have no idea why the slavery took place. I have no idea why there needed to be an Egyptian exile. Which means this, at least to some, is the only reason, which is, and it's in the same section. And Avram questions God, Bama'ida. How am I going to know? So over here, what it's saying is, well, Avram misused his speech when he asked God this question. And it's saying, again, what's Pesach? Posach. Over here, there's a speech. Po Shesach. Sorry, maybe is that Po or Pe? Pe Shesach B'me'ida. Right, Pe Shesach B'me'ida. The mouth that said, how am I going to know? Garam Levanav Lishtabed Ad Ze Ha'et. Cause there to be slavery till this point. Now, this idea that Pesach is related to Pesach is later going to be picked up by the Arizal, and later is going to be picked up by many different Hasidic writers. And it's, I mean, all over, but I'm just pointing out that this Moshe of Zakenim will take us back to the Balei HaTosfot, even, who have said this. Source number 10, Sefer Mavo L'Chachmat HaKabbalah, V'kol Mikoach B'gam HaPeh, that when one misuses their mouth, they cause all kinds of problems. Lachin bigalut shaletet malchut esitra achra rachmana letzlan b'chinat paro. And what is paro? Otiot pe ra. Paro had a bad mouth. Right? Who's God? Me, right? Who's God that I should be afraid of him, and so on and so forth, or release the Jews? So it's interesting. Uvi yitzia l'cheirut, but when they left, na'ase Pesach, then they celebrated Pesach, which is Pesach. So again, this mouth that could speak. And he says, "Kedivrei Ari al Kadosh v'hainu pe chayim b'makom pe ra." It becomes the mouth of life, taking the place of this evil pe. It's also anytime you connect para with ra is always interesting in terms of the mythology of Egypt. So it's very interesting, right? Ra in terms of a god in Egypt, but over here he's associated with Pe-ra. What's also, what he's pointing out is it's Pe-chayim, and he points out that the word Sach, Po-sach, Sach be-gematria, is Chayim, right? That's an easy gematria. Mem plus Yud is Samach. Yes? And Chet, Samach and Chet is Sach. So it says that indicates life. And we will skip the rest of this, but the rest of this, what he does is he does go into the idea of Mashiach. And especially in terms of development of Torah Sheba'al, and how that's part of moving towards the Messianic age. And as I said, that's the continuation over here, which you're certainly invited to look at. The Degel Machane Ephraim, one of the early Hasidic masters, V'yadua degalut Mitzrayim hoya ki haya chaser sod hadat. There was a lack of understanding, which, by the way, takes you back to the Eitz Hadat Tovara. There's a lack of dat. The reason why he can say this is that If you go back from the beginning of Parashat Shmot till Yetziat Mitzrayim, you will find the word dat used many, many times. And then the people will know that I am God. And then people will know that I'm king of the entire universe. And then people will know that I took you out. The word dat, lamante du derotechem, and so on. The word dat is used multiple times in the narrative. V'zeya ha-galut mamash, l'chein ha-yakol mitzumtzam b'mochin b'ktanim b'katnutam, which we're going to skip a little bit to the end of the third line, where it writes, V'zehu Pesach, Pesach, Pe, Mispar Mila, Shehu B'chinat Yesod. So he's pointing out that Pe is connected to the Brit Mila, which is one of the things the Jews needed to do in order to leave Egypt, which is connected to Yesod. And the reason he's saying that is, again, because of Gematria over here. What is his Gematria? Mila is 40, 70, 85, which is Peh, is 85. So over here, why did the Jews need to do Brit Milah before they needed to leave Egypt? What the Degel Machaneh Ephraim just now said is that that's going to allow them to speak. Now you're going to stop and say, what am I talking about? What is the connection between these things? Is that they're in a world of Tumah. They're in a world which is full of impurity. That's this whole idea from the Zohar. They're in the 49th level of Tumah. And somehow they need to be liberated from the 49th level of Tumah. So how do you do that? So you need there to be some kind of a circumcision which removes Tumah, which then creates something which is holy. So it's just pointing out that Milah, now the interesting thing about Milah is this Brit Milah, but there's also Milah in terms of words. So Peh and Milah over here are seen to be connected. Visach is Chaim, so therefore Pesach has to do with Milah of words of life and words of living, which, again, let's just stop and try to understand this. What this theme is saying is that leaving Egypt is going to include something which for us is going to be very obvious as over the next 5 minutes, and that is it includes somehow liberating speech. Speech needs to become liberated. That now there's speech. So prior to this, there's not speech, but as I said, maybe it's a little unfair that I'm using Kabbalistic sources and or Hasidic sources at this point. Source number 12 is the Yetev Lev. Yetev Lev is the begin, as far as I know, is the first of the Teitelbaum Hasidic family, which eventually comes into the Satmar family. He talks about, we'll go from where it's underlined, V'gam az sha'amar Moshe lama, right, why are things worse? That was bad, because Moshe is complaining again at that point. Bishvil, and it goes back again. All of this begins Bishvil Sha'amar Avram b'me'ida. Amar lo Kodesh Baruch Yodoa teida. Right? So therefore it has to do with knowledge. V'kamoshim afreshim ha'olam v'yared Mitzrayim anus. And it says that in Mitzrayim they are anus alpi hadibur. Listen to what, right? That's in the Haggadah? That they were somehow forced or taken advantage of. How would you translate? Coerced. Based upon Dibur, listen to what he says. Hainu shel Avraham. Whose words? Avraham's words. Im kain, kivan she'amar Moshe lama hariota v'hir her achamidotav gam lower oily kanes ba'ol hashiabu. That's why things get worse. Ela machmat she'bishvil Yisrael diber lo pagabo al kol panim shuv hayalok tzat chet v'yenechnas begeder hasafek im lishtabed mitzrayim alo im kain laman Moshe Adonenu v'zuchuto shuv nitzlo ko Yisrael va'azei yachol zuchuto lagen alem kineskar la'el. Again, without going into all of this, I'm just trying to point out again, he's making this connection between, see, it's also Moshe now. And they say, well, hold on, what did Moshe have to do with all of this? So when God sends Moshe to go and take out the people, what does Moshe keep saying multiple times? I can't speak. And we never really understood, you know, how that really fits into all of this. But now you realize that, again, there is this subtext that what's going to be liberated over here is speech itself. And Moshe is saying, but I can't speak. And that's in source 13, where Moshe says, Kaved Peo, Kaved Lashon. And later on, it's going to be in source 14, when he said, Dabero Paro. And he says, no, and he Aral Svatayim, which is also interesting between Milah and Milah. Aral Svatayim, and therefore I can't speak, versus the Milah, and again, in both senses, over here. And now you realize that that's, you know, much worse than we thought. In source 15, which is the Sfat Emet, and 16 is the Sfat Emet, It's interesting. It's all about speech. The Sfat Emet, the Sfat Emet. The next is the Imre Menachem. It's all about speech over here. Even the names of the books that we're quoting, all of them go back to this point about Egypt having to do with the problem of Dibur, the problem of now it's Pesach and now they're going to speak, and Tikkun HaPeh. He also goes into the idea of Pesach and Milah, which again, we would have said, what is one thing after the other? Again, the Korban Pesach, in order to participate in the Korban Pesach, you need Brit Milah. Brit Milah and Pesach are the only two mitzvot aseh that lack of doing them, and when obligated, causes somebody to be cut off from the Jewish people. That these things are definitive in terms of who the Jewish people are. And over here, the Korban Pesach, I just want to be very clear about this, it's really not enough just to bring the Korban Pesach. And again, let's just say this in order. To bring the Korban Pesach, a person needs to have Brit Milah. Women, by the way, the Gemara says, are all considered, Jewish women are considered to be as if they already had a Brit Milah. It's not, the Gemara doesn't say that they are Pterot, they're already considered to be Brit Milad, if that's the word. That's the way the Gemara understands it. So again, it's not that they don't have to do this. They're already on that. They're already considered to be on that status. That's the way the Gemara understands. So therefore, in order to participate in the Korban Pesach, a person needs the Brit Milah. You have the Milah and the Milah. Milah and the Pesach, the Milah. But there's another element. It's not enough just to eat the Korban Pesach. That's not enough. You need something else. And this goes back to an argument which is dependent on how to understand the words of Rabban Gamliel. Right? What did Rabban Gamliel say that we in the Mishnah, which made its way into our Seder, Kol mi she'omer shelosh dvermeil lo yitzei yedei chovato pesach matzah morer. So now, when it says that whoever doesn't say these things has not fulfilled their obligation, there is an argument which obligation they haven't fulfilled. Have they not fulfilled the obligation of telling the story, which we'll come back to in a moment? Or the Ramban says they haven't completed the obligation of eating the Korban Pesach. That eating the Korban Pesach necessitates a story with it. It needs a narrative. By the way, part of the narrative of the Korban Pesach is the matzah and the maror. Part of the narrative, again, not just as food, but as symbols. When Hillel comes and says you need to eat these things together, what's the idea? To understand this, you need these two points. You need to understand the maror, you need to understand that we were slaves, and then you need to understand that we became free. Which means the Korban Pesach needs a narrative with it. The narrative with it is the Pesach Matzah Umar. So therefore, the separation between the Korban Pesach and the speech may be an artificial separation. And the fact now that we're finding these authorities are telling us that no, Pesach is connected to speech. Pesach, there needs to be speech done together with the Korban, is not something which is accidental, but is something which is actually far more connected than we would have perhaps imagined. Going to source 18, here we're back in Perek Yud. Perek Yud is in Parshat Bo, but it's before, it's the beginning, it's where everything happens. That's in Perek Yud Bet. V'yomer Shem Moshe Bo Paro, kini hichbadeti et libo, that leva vadav, leman shiti ototai ela bikirbo, uleman tisaper, ba'azne bincha uven bincha et asher talalti bimitzrayim, vet ototai shesamti bam, viadatim kini Hashem. So again, here we have, going backwards, the yidia, the dat, the knowledge. What did Avram say? Bime'ida. And over here we have viadatim. Now you're going to know. What else do we have over here? Uleman tisaper. Which means part of what's taking place is for a very simple reason. And what's that? It's in order to, meaning, why did we need all of these plagues? This is the introduction to the last three plagues. Why do we need the plagues? So we have a good story to tell. And you're going to say, what? That's really what it says over here in the Chumash. I'm just pointing out, that's not an imagination. That's what it says. Why do we have these last couple of plagues? He's saying, so you're going to have something to tell your kids about because, you know, again, we're leaving. We're not going to be here. We're going on. We're going to be celebrating this later on in the land of Israel. And this, I'm doing this. Leman tisaper. This is why this is taking place. When we get to source 19, Vayoki v'yacha Hashem el eretz haknani v'achiti v'amori v'achivi v'yivusi. And when you're going to get to the land which God has promised, lach eretz zavan chalav udvash, vavadetet avoda hazot bechodesh hazeh. Most likely what that pasuk means is you're going to do this service, which is the Pesach. But then it continues and it says, shivat yamim tocha matzot. For 7 days you're going to eat matzah. And the seventh day will also become a holiday because the first day holiday was already mentioned in the previous chapter. What's going to be the nature of the seventh day holiday? The seventh day is when not only are we going to speak, but we're going to take the speech to one level higher. What are we going to do on the seventh day? We're going to sing. That's going to be the Az Yashir. That's when the sea is going to be split. That's when we're going to come back to life. Right? We're going to be really at that point where we think we have our backs against the wall, right? So Egyptians on the one side, warder on the other hand, but basically we're dead. That's going to be an experience of Tchiyat HaMetim. The whole idea of leaving Egypt is an idea of the Jews coming back to life, of a nation that looked like it was dead, there was no future, it was dead, but now the nation will come back to life. Part of the idea of a Mitzorah, just going back, is somebody as if that they're dead. And part of healing the Mitzorah is somebody who is able to come back to life. The Mitzorah becomes as if they're dead, and one of the things that the cause of the Mitzorah is misspeech. So now the elevation of speech is part of what becomes this idea of life. For 7 days, you're going to eat matzah, and the 8th day is a holiday. Matzot ye'achel et shivat yamim, v'leir elachamet, v'leachal sa'or b'chol gvulecha, v'higadat elevincha b'yomahu le'mor b'avur zeh. And you tell your kid, now it's on that day, so is this on the first day, or is this on the all 7 days? What is the ba'avur zeh? What is the zeh pointing at right now? Is the zeh the Korban Pesach, or is that the matzah? It sure sounds like the matzah, right? 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 Zeh asali b'tzeiti mitzrayim. V'hayolcha la'ot ayadcha l'zikaron b'enecha l'manti ha'torah tashem b'ficha. Right? That the Torah will be in your mouth, and so on. The commentaries from here to the end of the page are going to be debating this point about, again, what is the zeh over here? Look at 22, Oktava Kabbalah. Pirish b'vur zot avodah shehi achilat matzah. V'lo yochal chametz, shehu tchilat ha-mitzvot. Shetziva lenu Hashem b'rach, asan lenu Hashem et otot shehotzianu mimitzrayim. It's the eating of the matzah. Again, it's interesting because now we've gone past the Korban Pesach, but we need to tell. See, what's interesting about this source, and this is what I want to stress, and you can definitely read this two ways. Maybe I'll read one more thing, and then I'll explain what I'm trying to hint at. 23 is that I make davar din siv. Bavur zeh lefi pshuto shel mikra dekoy al kol shiv'a. The simplest way of reading this pasuk is referring to all 7 days, which is, why is he saying that? You'll eat matzah for 7 days. Yes, that's what it says. V'gadat t'levincha. Now, v'gadat t'levincha b'yomahu, b'avor zeh, but the b'avor zeh is talking about why you're eating it for 7 days. So he's understanding that each one of these 7 days, there's an obligation to talk. So I just want to stress something. Normally, how do we celebrate Pesach? Well, Pesach, let's even say this a little bit sharper. We all know, I think, that biblically, and even biblically, there's two different holidays. There's Chag HaMatzot and there's Chag HaPesach. Chag HaPesach is the day we bring the Korban Pesach. It begins when you bring the Korban, and it ends when you can't eat the Korban anymore. For 7 days, which, again, there's an overlap over here, the 7 days which start with nightfall. See, part of the thing about the Korban Pesach is it's a Korban. In the Beit HaMikdash, it's the night comes after the day. In terms of holidays, right, the night comes before the day. So we have a Beit HaMikdash holiday, and we have a regular holiday, which are overlapping one another. So the Pesach holiday starts the day and goes into the night, while the Chag HaMatzot starts the night, then continues until sunset, but over here in this case goes on for 7 days. So I would have thought earlier that maybe this whole idea of talking about Pesach only has to do with the Korban Pesach, and therefore the whole mitzvah is only during the Haggadah, right? Only during that night. And only during that night, when the Korban Pesach is there, and that's actually the limit of Chazal, Bavur Zeh, right? When the Matzah Mor or the Pesach Matzah Mor are standing in front of you is the only time that there is an obligation. But something very funny happened in this little section over here, because Korban Pesach is not really the main issue over here, and over here we're talking about a 7-day holiday, but it's also talking about speech, which means as much as we like to imagine that as soon as, you know, the clock strikes 12, We all turn into pumpkins, as it were, and we no longer have to have the mitzvah of talking about, that's it, the Haggadah is over. No. Over here, it's, yes, there's the idea of Higadah to the Vincha, and the Haggadah is that night, but it seems to be that there's mitzvah of speech for all 7 days. And the reason for this is that in Egypt, as slaves, we lost our voices. That's really what it was. We lost our voices. And, you know, if you think about Jewish history, this is so true, that there have been various times in history that we lost our voices, that we were not able to speak. We couldn't speak for ourselves. We couldn't advocate for ourselves. We couldn't complain. And that's part of it. I mean, Rav Soloveitchik, who liked always to see things more in terms of halacha, he said, well, when a slave, an eved, is patur me'edut, is unable to give testimony. And I believe one of the commentaries over here that I skipped says, oh, that's the issue over here in terms of the speech, that the speech is connected with the edut, is to give over testimony. And therefore, when God says, tell your children, he's saying, no, you're being valued. You have a voice. You have a story to tell, which means the slave has nothing to, can't complain because slavery is unending. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And there's no voice and there's no speech. There's no story. There's no narrative. And over here, part, again, for Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's a halachic issue that now that you're free, now you are kosher le'edut, now you have a narrative to tell, and now you're to be believed, and we're going to pass on this message to different generations. But this is actually a little bit more than this. It's not just on Pesach night that we have a mitzvah to speak, which means what the pshat, and that's what the Netziv is telling us, and I think the Ketav HaKabbalah is pointing at as well, is that the idea of speech is part of being free. The idea that we can advocate, that we can complain, even complaining, is part of something which is free. Say, no, this is not the way that it should be. And, you know, you look back, you know, again, we'll just go back maybe to one snapshot. In America during the Holocaust, Jews for the most part did not have a voice. My father's grandfather was one of the rabbis who went to Washington and marched on Washington and complained, and it was one of the very few events that took place. We were unable to advocate for ourselves. Maybe we weren't unsure. Maybe we didn't know how bad things were, but some did. And maybe we didn't know if our position was strong enough that we have this ability to really to complain and to demand and to say, you know, this is unethical, what is taking place over here. How can a democracy like America not get involved? But we didn't have a voice. And as much as, you know, the state of Israel today annoys people, and Israelis annoy people, and we speak and we talk and we complain and we think we know everything, but that's part of being free. Part of being free is being able to speak and being able to advocate and be able to complain and be able to say things are not the way that they're supposed to be. And that's very, very healthy. It's the people that can't speak and don't complain and everything, you know, they expect things not to be good. That's the person who's stuck. So it's interesting what we're seeing that Netziv is saying, this idea, it's not just Pesach night that there's a mitzvah to tell your children, we got it to Levincha. All of Pesach is about speaking. Every time you eat matzah, you should be speaking. And you should be eating matzah for 7 days, but this is part of the liberation. Part of the liberation is finding our voice, and it goes back. In Egypt, we didn't have a voice. In Egypt, we perhaps are guilty, going back to this collective punishment from Avram B'Me'idah, but now we become free. And when we become free, now we have to speak properly. And speaking properly means having appreciation for what God did and saying thank you. And saying, you know, Shira, and be able to sing, and be able to say Hallel, and be able to, again, say that things really are wonderful. That's part of what Pesach is, again, for all 7 days, not just for that one isolated night. So Pesach really becomes, again, on this machshava level, the inverse of the tzara'at. It becomes the person who comes back to life instead of the person who lost life, instead of the person who spoke inappropriately, the person who finds their voice, and the nation who finds their voice, the nation who knows how to complain. Again, this is good, who knows how to complain and saying things are not really where they should be yet, that ultimately is what we saw, those sources in the middle, which were very difficult, leads to finding wherever Mashiach happens to be standing right now with all the people who have tzarat, all those people who are like they're dead, all those people who don't have a voice, and watching them come back to life. And that's the reason why in normal years on Shabbat Chol HaMoed, which we don't have this year, the Haftorah that we read is the Haftorah of the dry bones, the Haftorah of something coming back to life. of something returning to life, an idea of Tchiyat HaMeitim. And that's why in the spring, when we look, and Pesach has to be in the spring, and we look outside and we see things coming back to life, we look at the trees that start to bloom and we make a bracha, because now suddenly we believe, just looking at the spring, we see that there really is Tchiyat HaMeitim. Things that we threw in the ground a long time ago have come back to life, and we realize that a nation can come back to life, and we realize the Messianic age can come, and people who are no longer around, were put in the ground, can also come back to life. Which means the idea of Pesach is the idea that things can come back to life, but that includes the healing of the Tzara'at.